Hey guys, welcome to the WWE podcast. And this is a fun show for you because this is where all the voicemails that you guys have sent me or questions that you've sent in, I respond to right now. That's the entire show. No slick intro, nothing. It's just straight to the point, straight to me answering all of your questions. And so, hey, let's get to it. First question. This one came in actually via Instagram, which, by the way, you can follow me at WWE_podcast. We have Jay Kurt. He comes in and asks, question for you. I grew up with the Attitude Era, and I'm partial to that. I quit watching when Stone Cold and The Rock left and started watching again 2 years ago. I know at a young age that I missed a lot of writing plot holes during that era. However, the writing today seems unacceptable on so many levels, and I feel like they never made those mistakes back then. My question is, when did the writing start to take a turn for what it is now? I know Vince is the easy answer, but there are specific moment. Was there a specific moment in time where it started to change, or a group of people left or came in? I have a hard time believing that the guys who have been around backstage through all of these eras can sit back and think this is the best we can do. Thanks for all you do. Well, so let me first say thank you for putting the question to me. I will say this too. I think that's a fair point that we were young back then, though most of us that watched the Attitude Era. So in the minds that we were in, I was, again, a teenager. The plot holes didn't stick out to me as much if they existed, or I didn't care. Simply because of the fact that the stars were so good, so big, and really legends in the making. I'm sure that if we went back and we watched the Attitude Era, Ruthless Aggression Era, we would go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. How does that happen? I'm sure. I mean, because, look, we advance our minds 20 years, we're going to pick up on things that we wouldn't have picked up on in our teens. Certainly, we would hope we get older with age. But that doesn't always happen. But, yeah, so answer your question, though. As far as was there a specific moment, was there that defining moment of everything turned? The answer is no. I think it was a slow demolishment of the few creative minds that were involved in the process, meaning Pat Patterson, Bruce Pritchard, Michael Hayes, and Vince McMahon. I mean, that was really the core of the creative at the time. And Jim Ross obviously came along, and he was the head of talent relations and would chime in here and there. And once it became a publicly traded company, I mean, that actually happened back in 99, but I would say the PG era is when they started to really be concerned about sponsors and building the next generation of wrestling fans, which, look, I think that's a smart move. But if I was going to point to something, I mean, I guess around the PG era, but things started to disintegrate once they started to bring in more writers in the mid to late 2000s. They started to bring in more writers thinking they needed fresh ideas, fresh minds. But the problem is, a lot of the people they brought in weren't really wrestling fans. They maybe have had experience writing TV shows, but if you're not a wrestling fan, you don't truly get what wrestling fans love, and what brings them to wrestling. It's not just as easy as picking up a writer from Seinfeld and bringing them into WWE. Just because you were successful at Seinfeld really is no indicator that you are going to be successful at professional wrestling. It's a totally different genre. So I really believe that as they brought in more writers about 15 years ago, that it started to go south because not only are there too many cooks in the kitchen with people that may or may not be wrestling fans, but the environment of WWE started to also switch. The culture started to switch to, let's make sure Vince is happy, right? Let's write for Vince instead of the fans. And whether they will admit that out loud or not is another matter. But I think that is what happened. I believe that's what happened, is that people were writing for Vince. People perform for Vince. They wrestle for Vince simply for the fact of, am I doing enough to keep my job? That's not a good environment, by the way. That is not a good environment, a productive environment. So that's my answer to your question. Alrighty, well, let's get to the first voicemail here and see who it is.
Hey, Matt. It's Kyle from New York again. I have two questions. One, are you interested in seeing The Undertaker versus The Fiend? Because I'm pretty sure you said it in the past in the podcast. I forgot if you said you're into it or if you're not into it, so I don't remember. But I want to see it. I'm down. Even though, because I guess the Boneyard match is okay for Final Match, but I'm with you. I don't really like the 7-9 matches that much. I'm with you on that. So I don't think it should have to be his Final Match. I think his Final Match should be in front of Finn. And hopefully, if he has a match with the Fiend at WrestleMania next year, hopefully that will be Finn. So, I want to see the match. Let me know what you say. The second question, did you hear about the AEW video games that are coming? Are you excited for them? If you didn't hear about it, they're making one console game for, I think PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, I think. And the other two games are both mobile games. I'm wondering if you're excited about that because I know people say that most people say their favorite wrestling game, the best wrestling game of all time, No Mercy. And Kenny Omega, I'm pretty sure, said the console game is going to be like No Mercy. So I'm wondering if you're excited about it. And also, if you think No Mercy is my favorite. It is a great game. I don't know if it's my favorite. I got to think about that. It's probably my top three. So let me know if you're excited for the three games. I'm pretty excited. And, yeah, that's really it. Thanks.
Kyle, thank you so much for calling in, and let me answer your second question first about the video game. Yes, I have heard about that. I have heard that they're trying to emulate the No Mercy engine that was so successful back in 99, 2000, 2001, that many games actually came from. WCW NWO Thunder, yeah, that was a thing. WCW NWO Revenge, it was WrestleMania 2000, and then the most popular and most beloved WWF No Mercy. Amazing video game. And you may look at the graphics today and laugh, but even today, I played it a couple of years ago, it is still it's just a perfect engine. And everything is just so good about it. Yeah, the graphics are laughable by today's standards, but it's just a fun, really fun game to play. I have no other words for it. But yes, I did hear about that. I'm excited. Certainly, I will probably buy it if it is a No Mercy copycat. I don't care because we all long for those days. So, yes. Your question about The Fiend versus Undertaker. I have addressed this a couple of times, and I'll address it again. I think that is a match that I would like to see. No, I know it is. I don't think. I know it's a match I'd like to see. And those of us out there, those of you out there who may be saying, Undertaker's done, he's washed up, no more. You will be the first person chanting one more match at a Hall of Fame ceremony. Because we may all see The Undertaker for kind of a shell of what he was in the ring. And look, he's Father Time. We get it. But you wouldn't want that one more time. You wouldn't want that match one more time against The Fiend. Give The Fiend the win and let him go on a 5-year tear. I mean, that's what Undertaker's doing right now. He's giving back to the business by documentaries, the crazy amount of documentaries and interviews he's done now. He's kind of just completely opened the floodgates on that. But yes, I'd be interested in it. I think it's the final match Undertaker will have at WrestleMania. I think you'll see it come to life at this year's Survivor Series with the Fiend's music hitting. Just as Undertaker, you think, is going to walk away and he's putting the microphone down and, you know, the announcers are stung like they're about to cry and everyone's somber and, you know, oh my God, 30 years. And then all of a sudden the Fiend's music hits. So yes, I would like to see it. I think it'll happen. I think it will. And thanks for the question. Okay, let's move on to that next voicemail.
Hi, this is Tim calling from Arlington, Texas. So I do have I hate to rant and I do have one, but before I get into that real quick, I was just going to say a little thing about your mailbox show. I do like it. I know I was kind of an advocate and I called you before and about maybe not having it and just doing it during your show. Here's kind of my issue that I'm kind of having with it is like, I call you on Friday during SmackDown and then I don't even get to, hear a response from you until the following Friday when I listen to my podcast. I don't know if it drops on Thursday because I don't have time to listen on Thursday, but I hear it on Friday. But, like, I like to call you after SmackDown. I like to call you after Raw. Sometimes I call you, I call you generally twice, sometimes three times to leave a voicemail. And now I don't want to because I don't need you to have three voicemails from me for one show. Where before it kind of made sense because it's like, okay, you're going to address my voicemail from Raw on your Raw review and then your SmackDown on SmackDown review or whatever. Actually, I shouldn't have got into all that because now I've run out of time to get on my Drew McIntyre rant. So I will call you back some other time to do my Drew McIntyre rant. Basically just about him. I'm just tired of him showing up all the time. Bottom line, he lost that Hell in a Cell clean to Randy Orton. And so he should stop being a baby. Basically, he's being a big crybaby. He shows up every time Randy Orton talks, every time he speaks, every time he's here. And he just, I mean, he kicked Miz and Morrison. Miz anyways. He kicked them and stopped them from doing his Money in the Bank cash-in, which is a big letdown for the fans. He's a babyface. He should never do something like that to discredit the Money in the Bank. It's not his job to get the championship back. Like, Randy Orton didn't cheat him out of the championship. So he doesn't have any right as a babyface showing up every single Raw and in between whenever he wants to make a big, I mean, he's being a bully. You know, he's being a heel. Anyways, I'm out of time. So that's what I wanted to rant about. All right. Bye.
Tim, how you doing? Thank you so much for the feedback. What I'll say about this being its own separate episode, I think that, I mean, I've gotten differing opinions on this, and I see your kind of lack of initiative to even call because you don't hear my response, your response for a while, because I only do it once a week. So if you call me on a Thursday, you won't hear my response for 6 days because I don't do a show and drop it until Wednesday night, Thursday morning. It may be a full week. So I totally get it. I mean, I get it. It's just, yeah, I have to pick one or the other, and I can't do both for time reasons. But here's what I'm thinking. And let me know, not just you, but everybody out there. Let me know what you're thinking about this, because I used to do live shows. I used to do actual live shows on Blog Talk Radio under a different name and then under the WWE podcast brand. But I think maybe live shows may be the best thing to do for those that want an instant reaction after a show. Now, here's the thing with that, though. I don't normally watch shows live. Pay-per-views I do, and that's about it. I watch Raw on delay. I watch SmackDown on delay. But I don't watch the shows live, simply because of the fact, too, that the shows end at 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And then it's like, well, you know, I need to get some sleep. I have to get up early. It doesn't jive well with my schedule, which is why I watch it on delay. But perhaps I start doing live shows in lieu of this mailbag, or in addition to. I'm curious, though. Before I even explore that option, let me know, guys. Would you like to have a live show where you could call in? We would be talking live, right? Like, it would be like you and I are talking, except there's no net, right? Like, I would respond in real time. So, hey, let me know what you think. It's an option. But Tim, thanks for the feedback. And I get it. I totally get it. So your question, though, about Drew McIntyre being or your comment rant about Drew McIntyre being a big baby. Yeah, I have been really down on Drew continuing to attack Orton, especially after the Hell in a Cell he lost clean. And then he attacks Orton the next night. Now, you could say, well, he's at least adhering to his word that he says every time Randy Orton and him are in the same building, he's going to beat the holy hell out of Randy Orton. So he is at least, they're being consistent with him following through on his word, which is what babyfaces should do. But when he came out and attacked Orton the night after Hell in a Cell, I said, oh, no, I actually was down on for the first time since Drew was champion. I was kind of down on him. I was like, no, please, spare the pain. But the other thing is, too, like you said, he lost clean at Hell in a Cell. So if he loses clean and the automatic rematch clause that WWE said is antiquated is no longer in effect, how does he get an opportunity again? Right? How does that happen? Adam Pearce? I mean, it's WWE Creative that is doing it, but why does he get another opportunity? I don't get it. You know, like, so, yeah, I'm with you. And him being champion again is, I don't dislike Drew as champion. I just think that taking it off of Randy after 3 weeks is a bad move. Bad, bad move. And it's very short-term thinking for WWE to put Roman versus Drew in a match that literally means nothing. at a pay-per-view that has no consequences. But I ranted on that like for 20 minutes on yesterday's show. But yeah, I mean, you're going to get me all fired up too. So thanks, Tim. I'll see what I can do. Let me know if the live show thing is a little bit more intriguing to you, and I'll see what we can do. All right, on to the next voicemail.
I'm Matt. This is Solomon from Denver, and I'm calling about championships. I think that they're very undervalued. Well, I don't like how if a wrestler has the championship, it's not the most important thing. Such as Bobby Lashley in the Hurt Business. He's more concerned about, like, beating up Titus O'Neil than actually the championship, which I don't like. Another case is Asuka. She's just not on TV, and she's essentially a world champion, which I don't like. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hey, Solomon. Hope all is well. Good points here. And I touch on this from time to time about the championships feeling secondary. And it kind of comes and goes in WWE. But WWE has always put personal rivalries above the championship. Almost always. Because they view personal rivalries as more money drawing than the championships. I would sometimes disagree. It depends on the rivalry. It depends on the stars. But in general, you know, kind of as a, at a high level, I agree that the championships are rarely what is truly important, at least what they're coming across as on screen, as what they care about. Why do they care about being champion? Why do they care about hanging on to it? You know, like, and they give away championship matches like water. So not only are the rivalries not really about the championship, but it often, it even compounds itself by happening so often that the championships are just defended. I mean, seeing a non-title match now is actually a rarity, which is sad. But the biggest offender, not only Titus O'Neil, right? Like, I totally get that. And Bobby Lashley being United States champion, he's kind of an afterthought, which is unfortunate. But he is at least in the Hurt Business as the muscle, and he is a big factor in the Hurt Business. So I do like that. I shouldn't say he's hiding and doing nothing. He is important right now to the Hurt Business. He's important right now to the Raw brand, believe it or not. I mean, I think they're at least doing something relevant with him. I was hoping he would beat Drew McIntyre a few months back earlier in the summer and become champion and go on a tear, but that was just crazy thinking on my part, given what's happened since then. But the biggest offender right now is Asuka. The biggest offender is Asuka. What they've done with her is a damn shame. I mean, yes, this past week she made Lana tap out, but I think my five-year-old niece could make Lana tap out the way they've booked her. They've made Asuka and the Raw Women's Championship just completely, they've made it lose its value at least by 50% over the last several months. Since Becky Lynch gave it to her and at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, the Monday Night Raw after, and announced her pregnancy and that Asuka didn't know she was competing for the Women's Championship and, oh my God, I got it. And they turned her babyface at that point. I don't think that, you know, after that, they did a great job at building that championship, continuing to add value to it. It feels secondary. It feels like an afterthought. And really, Asuka has been in stupid comedy segments half the time with Street Profits and doing her wacky, silly cartoon faces and screaming in Japanese and all this stuff that's just very animated and like she emotes way overboard and all these things. It's just like, you know, and you forget she's women's champion. That's a problem right now. They have a problem with that championship. They just don't know what to do with it or who to have her defended against. So I'm with you. Thanks, Solomon. Okay, let's continue.
Hey, Matt, it's Brad from Pennsylvania again. I was just listening to your podcast, and I got to agree with you about the whole Raw SmackDown, how Drew McIntyre show up on SmackDown, how Adam Pearce makes the match then unsanctioned, because I believe they did the same thing with Braun Strowman one time, where he showed up on Raw and he said, you can't be here, so I'll give you a fight, it'll be unsanctioned. Here's my plan instead. This isn't a great plan, but this, you know, to alter what they do and make it a little bit acceptable. Since we all know that they're going to break this rule more times, this isn't the last time seeing through And like you said, we probably will see Roman show up on Raw. So, you know, a month from now, there'll be another star on another brand and so forth until the next draft. How about this? Every time we have a star show up from a different brand and they want to have one of these unsanctioned matches, you know, a perfect place to do that would have been Raw Underground, which could have just became WWE Underground, and then you could have done it on SmackDown also when a Raw superstar shows up on SmackDown. We have an Underground match. You know, that's simple. Every time, then we don't have to have Adam Pearce say, I'll give you a fight, but it's unsanctioned. I want to see someone fight Adam Pearce. That's about the point I'm getting at with Adam Pearce. Nobody knows who he is, why he's there, why he holds power. He just makes these matches. I can't stand him. There's something about his face. I just want to see someone punch him. That's all I got for you today, buddy. Let me know what you think about my Underground proposition. See you, man. Stay safe.
Hey, Brad. Your comment about Adam Pearce made me laugh. Yes, I do want to see somebody beat him up. He's very unlikable on screen. I don't know. I mean, I know they're trying to make him kind of a neutral figure, and I get that because they have heard loud and clear that the heel authority figure has well overstayed its welcome, and I understand that, and I agree. But if they're trying to make him neutral, I do want to see someone just beat the holy hell out of him. I do. He is very unlikable. He's kind of a D-bag at times, and I just want to see someone hit a finisher on. Like, I want to see Stone Cold Steve Austin come out and just drop him with a stunner, right? I mean, if this was the good old days, I would be asking, begging for that. Yes, I'm with you on that. But your idea about Raw Underground being a place where Raw and SmackDown stars could fight one another, yeah. But here's the problem with that. Well, number one, Raw Underground's gone. So if they were to resurrect it, they could do something much different, just like you're suggesting. But the other thing is, then they wouldn't be able to label Survivor Series as the only time SmackDown and Raw superstars go head-to-head. You know, even though it happened this past week on SmackDown, it happens at the Royal Rumble when they all fight one another, it happens randomly throughout the year with no explanation. It's just absurd that they say that, but if they dedicate a segment every week to it, I think that will take away their marketing slogan that they have for Survivor Series about the one time a year SmackDown and Raw superstars go head-to-head. And I think they never really viewed Raw Underground as a sustainable long-term solution, because once it gets back into live fans and you have fans in an arena, they're not going to want to watch the TitanTron for potential really good matchups between the Raw and SmackDown stars. So I like your concept, but I don't think in practice WWE would like it, because it takes away their Survivor Series luster of whatever they think is left in their imaginary land here, in imagination land, to quote a South Park episode. I don't think it would work in practice. Good idea, though. Good idea. All right, let's move on.
Hey, Matt. It's Devin from Australia again. I hope you're well. Just thought I'd say I'm really enjoying the voicemail or the mailbag shows you have, where we can all have all our faves in one show. It's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. I also enjoy hearing other people's opinions. So I think that's a great idea that you've done it that way. On Monday Night Raw, I saw that Drew McIntyre won, which, again, winning such a championship on a Monday Night Raw versus a pay-per-view kind of loses its shine a bit. But something I noticed right at the end, after the pinfall, Randy Orton tapped Drew on the thigh. I don't know if you saw that or if that, and I was wondering if that meant anything, because I mean, he got floored by the Claymore, but he just had this little tap on Drew's thigh, and I was wondering if you noticed that too, if anyone else noticed that, and if they thought it meant something. I'm a little bit sus about what that could mean, but I wouldn't have a clue. Yeah, so I thought I'd just ask that. And also, I must say, I enjoyed the Hurt Business versus New Day. Unfortunately, the result wasn't what I was hoping. I was hoping for a Hurt Business opportunity. I think it's time for them to get something. They've got a great leader in MVP. They've got a U.S. champion, and I think the tag team championship would sit well with them. And plus, I'm just so tired of seeing those Neapolitan clowns with the belts around their waist. So, yeah, bit over the new day, been for quite a while. But anyway, again, loving your show. Big fan. Take care, mate. Bye.
Hey, buddy, I haven't heard from you in a while. Glad to... glad that you're enjoying the mailbag, and you're officially now a part of it as well. So very cool. So yeah, first things first, I agree that the New Day and their Street Profits, I'm sorry, the New Day and the Hurt Business had an amazing match on Raw. I covered it in detail in my Raw review, but it was awesome. And I agree that I don't think that the right team won there, but I know that they were trying to get to the Street Profits versus New Day. That's what they've been building to. So I didn't see any reason that they would change the belts right now. No question. You know, I think that they look at the New Day as kind of this solid, never going to break them up team. And for whatever reason, people keep buying their merchandise. I don't know. You kids need to you know, find another role model. Can we please move on so that WWE can stop looking at their financials and going, oh, we can't break them up. Man, their merchandise is selling like crazy. We need to. No, please stop buying the merchandise. That's the best thing we can do. If you want New Day to go away and dissolve completely, stop buying their stuff. I will say that loud and clear. But yeah, also glad you're enjoying this mailbag episode. Yeah, I'm glad that you're enjoying everyone kind of coming together, as you said. Your question, though, about Drew McIntyre tapping, or Randy Orton tapping Drew McIntyre in the thigh, I noticed it, but it didn't register with my memory of something to bring up until you did. And I think it's interesting. You're right. Do I think it means anything long term? No. I think it was an in the moment, you know, great job kind of tap as an inside communication, meaning it wasn't supposed to be something Randy Orton did as part of a story. I think it was something that Randy Orton did just out of, you know, kind of a thank you to Drew McIntyre on the inside, right? I don't think it was something, and the announcers didn't acknowledge it. I just, that's what I think it was. I think it was just something that was like a thanks, man. You know, great job. You know, here's the belt back. Like, attaboy kind of thing. That's what I think it was. That's how I read it anyway. But alrighty, well, awesome. Thank you so much for calling in. Please feel free to call back anytime. And let's get to the next one.
Hey, it's the Waz. Just calling in reference to what happened with McIntyre and Orton on Monday. Just watched it. I'm assuming that you probably can't stand the fact that they gave it back to McIntyre and all that kind of stuff. First of all, I don't know. I'm after all these years of watching wrestling, I've not ever paid for a pay-per-view or any of that kind of thing because I feel like I can wait till Monday and find out exactly all that happened, get footage of what happened, even if it's just pictures. So as much as it would be nice to watch it live, I've just never paid the money for it. So them putting in a pay-per-view type match on Monday night was great for me. But I can understand why others might be upset. Second of all, I think that they pulled it off of Randy so that Randy and The Fiend can have some kind of feud go on without the belt being in the middle of it. And I think that, for my opinion, is the biggest reason why. I can be completely wrong, but I do believe that that is why. And I do hope that The Undertaker does show up and is part of that whole Randy Orton and The Fiend fight, rivalry, whatever that goes on. I do think that The Miz will probably try to take the belt from probably McIntyre when he loses on Sunday, because that's my prediction that he's going to lose against Reigns. And McIntyre won't have the belt anymore, because I think Miz will get it, and then we'll have to deal with Miz having the belt for a short time. But just some of my thoughts about what I thought was going on with all that and why I think they changed things and did it so quickly. Thanks again. Bye.
Hey, Waz. Hope everything's going well with you. And you could be very well right about The Fiend and Orton. It's probably more than likely that's what happens. And I believe that Orton is going to, I don't want to give away my predictions yet, but there could be very well a lot of interference in this McIntyre versus Reigns match at Survivor Series. But Orton is no longer on the pay-per-view. Where does he stand? Right? How can he not be on the Survivor Series pay-per-view along with The Fiend? The Fiend is not a part of the Survivor Series pay-per-view. So it very well could be that these two, now that they got nothing going on, either don't appear at Survivor Series or do, and there's some kind of interaction. But yes, there was a very clear message sent by The Fiend that Orton is next, given the fact that he burned down Sister Abigail's house in the woods, and they keep replaying that image of him standing in front of a fire leading to the cabin that was burned down. Iconic at this point, that image. Or they could have nothing happen with these two, and we have The Fiend attack The Undertaker, which I think is very possible. So I'm hoping for the latter. I wouldn't mind The Fiend versus Orton. The Fiend has kind of turned babyface at this point anyway. I know that he's always been labeled as a tweener and never really booed because he's so damn cool. But I think if he faces Orton, it would be a fairly established, solid babyface camp that he would be sitting in. And Orton would be a good foil for him. I think those two could have a long program. If The Fiend and Undertaker don't cross paths at Survivor Series, I'll be kind of disappointed if they don't, to be honest. But Waz, thanks so much for calling in. Great ideas as always, and I will talk to you the next time.
Hey, how you doing? It's the casual wrestling fan. Hey, I just wanted to go over a couple of points real quick with you. I don't understand why the New Day got over the Hurt Business. I don't know what led to that decision. I feel like the Hurt Business should have went over. I mean, it didn't have to be clean. They didn't have to get over clean, but they should have got over. They should have went to Survivor Series and beat the Street Profits, and then they could have did a program with the New Day up until TLC. I feel like that was the play. I don't know why they keep giving the New Day so much clout, if you will. And personally, I don't mind the New Day, but I really don't like them without Big E. I don't think Xavier Woods is a good number two. But anyway, Nick, do you think Sheamus is going to turn face? I mean, assuming he's not already face. I mean, because the way he's talking to Drew McIntyre, I don't know if he's trying to put up for a nice face run or like to do a super heel turn. I'm not sure. But anyway, a couple questions coming up for the Fire Series. I'm not asking you if you think this person's going to win. I'm asking, do you think they should win? Like me, I think Bobby Lashley should obviously be over on Sami Zayn. I don't see Sami Zayn winning that, and I don't think he should. And number two, obviously, I think Roman Reigns should be over on Drew McIntyre. Once again, it don't have to be clean, but I think he should be over. But that's all I got. Love listening to your show, and you guys have a great day.
Thanks, man, for calling in, Mr. Casual Wrestling Fan. Thank you so much. So a lot of questions there, a lot of content. I'm going to try to answer as many as I can here. Roman Reigns should beat Drew. That's a good point. Not what I think has happened, what I think should happen. And you're right. Roman should beat Drew. Roman is more important as a heel than Drew is as a babyface, because Roman's just starting to gain traction. He's just starting to really kick ass as a heel. You don't want to cut it short and cut the legs out before it even gets going with Drew McIntyre beating him. Again, we have to remember too, this match means nothing, because there's no consequences. It's just bragging rights. No championships on the line. It's a joke. But it's an exhibition match. People will remember it. It's two big names that people have been wondering what's going to happen when they collide. I think there's going to be some funny business. And why Drew loses is because of Sheamus. That's my guess. It's not my official prediction. You'll have to wait till Saturday. But as it stands right now, that is my official guess as to what may happen. I don't think Sheamus is going to turn babyface. Sheamus as a babyface never works. I don't think. Sheamus is built to be a heel, and I think he just will show his true colors on Sunday when he ends up, I think, screwing Drew McIntyre out of his match with Roman Reigns. So that's what I think. Bobby Lashley, yeah, I think he should go over Sami Zayn, but at the same time, Sami Zayn makes a good case for winning because he's so damn good as a heel, and this is a heel versus heel match, but I don't care. I think that heel versus heel can work. It absolutely can work. And I'm expecting a really good match from these two. it's really a toss-up as to who I think will win, but who should win? Bobby Lashley. You're right. I think Bobby Lashley should win. Sami Zayn can talk himself out of anything, and even if he loses, he can bounce back. Bobby Lashley doesn't have that luxury because he can't talk that well. Yes, he is MVP, but I think Sami Zayn he's very Teflon at this point. Even if he loses clean to Bobby Lashley, it's not going to be that big of a deal. So I think Bobby needs to win more. New Day, yeah, Big E not being a part of it is strikingly obvious. But I would like to say that if Big E's not a part of the New Day anymore because he's solo, for him to kind of, for God's sakes, change a little bit. This guy is going to be a main eventer, but can we start to wash that stink of the New Day off of him and stop being a clown backstage and start doing something a little more serious, please? That's all I'm asking. New Day's a great talent. I'm sorry, Big E's a great talent. New Day are good in the ring, but yeah, I'm not a fan of their pancake throwing and their constant inside jokes and all that stuff that's been long, long past its shelf life. But all right, well, thanks for calling in, and I think a couple more here, and then we'll wrap up the show. Let's get to the next one.
Hello, Matt. This is Sharon from Israel. This time I want to speak a little bit with you about the Money in the Bank current case with Miz winning it from the match with Otis. Now, I really don't have a man with Miz winning in this Money in the Bank. It's not a problem with the Miz. It's a problem with the rules of this match. I mean, Miz wasn't even in the match itself. I mean, the match that was in May, I believe. Yeah, May was the Money in the Bank match. So yeah, Miz wasn't in the original match. And from out of nowhere, Miz is coming and winning Otis. I don't know in which reason they did this match, but whatever. And then he's holding the Money in the Bank. The problem is that there was wrestlers. There were really wrestlers. They did something in order to be in the match of the Money in the Bank. What about AJ Styles? What about King Corbin? What about Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black that nearly died when they fell out of the roof in the original Money in the Bank match? And then I remembered that I shouldn't be surprised of this thing, because in the last year Money in the Bank match, there was another kind of weird thing where there was the original people that were in the match, and then who won it? Brock Lesnar. How did he win it? He came out of nowhere, and then he beat up Mustafa Ali, and he took the Money in the Bank briefcase. It wasn't in the original match. Oh boy. It's part of the no saving the rules of the WWE. There is no original rules that WWE can save. I mean, look on the Hell in a Cell match. Almost this year again, people came from the outside in order to stop the match. So we don't even want to start about talking about the last year Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with Seth Rollins and The Fiend. And the same thing with the draft, quarterly invitation, wild card wars that they invent every year. And really, I don't understand the rules of the WWE, and I don't understand how they are not saving it. This should be like when someone will buy the company from Vince McMahon, he should do and the constitution of the WWE, that there would be some set of rules that you cannot break. Yeah. And if we're speaking about rules of WWE, can you please explain me the rules of the triple threat or the fatal four-way tag team match? Because I really don't understand them. Every time they are doing this kind of match, they are like four men in the ring at the same time, or three, and you can take someone that is not your partner. Really, this is so stupid, this kind of match, the fatal four-way or the triple threat tag team match. So, yes. Yeah, anyway, it was pleasant to speak with you, Matt. Till next time, bye.
Hey, Sharon, thank you for calling in all the way from Israel. That's so crazy every time I say that. But hope you're doing well. It sounds like you're on your way to work or drove to work or drove somewhere and got out of your car. But hopefully you're not on your phone and talking. I want you to be safe. But hey, thank you for always for being a listener of the show. And let's get to your questions here. So the Money in the Bank briefcase is really a sticking point with me the last couple of years. Right. I remember Brock Lesnar. Right. You brought up the Mustafa Ali. He beat him up, took it. Right. This year we have Otis, who wasn't even in the match, or The Miz, who wasn't even in the match, take it from Otis. And it is a bit concerning that the people aren't in the match. WWE doesn't have faith enough in to cash in successfully and become champion. I totally agree with that. I don't agree with WWE's booking of doing that. However, Otis this year, the way that they booked him, the way that the fans started to really react to him. Yes, I know we don't have live fans, but the way that social media, I guess, started to react to him, which is the best gauge we have right now, it was not good. I think Otis, WWE did a disservice to him, making him constantly focused on his weight. They're still doing it to this day. Look what happened at Spat SmackDown. Him sitting in catering, like eating fried chicken and mashed potatoes, or whatever the hell he was eating. So they focused on his weight. He's always wearing shirts that are six sizes too small. He's always doing jiving and jiggling. Vince gets a kick out of his belly, I'm sure, and the whole, gyrating and kind of like air humping that he does in the middle of the ring when he's starting to like Hulk up or whatever it is. It's not good. It's not a really becoming of a champion that you're trying to crown. So I totally get why, and I agree with why he should not have had the championship opportunity with the Money in the Bank briefcase. I do not want him as champion anywhere near a championship right now, because he is just not a champion. He's just not. He's comedy. And anytime it's your place is comedy, you're out of the championship picture, period. So, but as far as your question about the Fatal 4-Way, Fatal 3-Way match, whatever, with tag teams, it's bizarre, isn't it? And I don't understand how you're able to tag in somebody that's not of your team. Makes no sense. I know they're trying to add unpredictability to the match, but there's no logic to it, right? Like, why should I be able to tag in somebody on your team? It's stupid. Just plain stupid. I agree. But those matches will forever exist. But sometimes, here's the thing. They don't always do that. Sometimes they do, but they have to stipulate that they're going to do that. Other times, they just have a straight-up fatal four-way or a three-way tag team match where you can only tag in your opponent. Or tag in your ally, right? So sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. It's not consistent. So I don't understand. It also doesn't make sense to me that three ways are by default DQ. No DQ. I don't understand that. Anybody else can give me that explanation as to why a triple threat match is automatically a no DQ match? Because, I mean, nobody. I mean, nobody can give me that answer. If you're going to tell me, well, what if somebody ends up hitting somebody else with a chair, then what? Well, that person should just get disqualified and leave the match, and then it's one-on-one. Very simple solution. Thank you so much, Sharon, for the listen and for the voicemail. It's much appreciated. So, all right. Well, I think that concludes our voicemails for this week. Again, guys, I'm curious to know, are you interested in doing live shows or continuing with this format? I want to know your thoughts, suggestions. You can also call us, right? If you want to be on this show, here's our voicemail, 518-952-0247. So you can also email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com if you prefer to send a voicemail that way. So thank you guys for everything. Thank you for the voicemails, taking the time to call in, and I will talk to you next time.